Success Match Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Good Thursday. Thanks for being with us. Bill Frieder is jumping on board with us today, the former Sun Devil coach, lead college basketball analyst for Westwood One. It is that time of year with March Madness and a big night ahead for Arizona tonight at Colorado and ASU at Utah. So we'll talk with Frieds on a college basketball. Charles Davis will be with us on today's show. We like Charles Davis a lot. Charles Davis, I thought, was a star last week at the Combine on the NFL Network. Charles Davis with the NFL Network Fox analyst. He just released his second mock draft. He was right in the middle of all of it. He was on set with Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota. So a lot of NFL draft and Combine stuff with Charles Davis coming up just after 10:35. I think we should, Eric, try to get Charles Davis as a weekly deal, kind of like what we have with Peter King and Pedro. Has he come to that status yet? Is he approaching that, you think?
Oh, yeah. And he's right.
Give us something?
He's right in our wheelhouse because he is a Pac-12 guy.
Yeah.
Because he does the games with Gus Johnson. And he's a Big 12 guy, does the games with Gus Johnson. But he also dabbles on the NFL side, too. So you get, you know, the best of both worlds. And he's not only a really good analyst, but a really good guy. So
you're fine if I just hit him up on the air for this.
It sounds like you've already made your decision.
It's an executive decision because there's no other executive.
I like how you asked me for permission after you decide what you're going to do.
Here's the thing. If you said, yeah, he's pretty good. You know, I can read you pretty well. Like, there's times I'll put a guest on or I'll say, let's do this guy. And it's like,
That hasn't happened in at least a day.
No, it happened this morning, I think. I saw the video of the movie about sexual assault that's on sportsillustrated.com about Jameis Winston that popped up this morning. And I called Eric over to look at it, and he's like, yeah, that's not good, but sports.
Yeah, it just happened to pop up today. What a coincidence.
Yeah, what a coincidence.
Wow, let's see. It's the middle of the week. It's about 3 days after the Combine ended where
this movie's going to get a few views.
Where Jameis Winston really, really did well, threw the ball well. Now he's kind of at the top of all these mock drafts.
So don't run off. I want to talk to you about something Eric did last night.
I'm not going anywhere.
I would hope not. Let's get you caught up some things on my mind in the world of sports. Brought to you by the Honda Resort and Casino. Honda Resort and Casino is just outside of Pine Top in the beautiful White Mountains. And there's a big storm coming this weekend. And there was a storm last week. So the snow up in Pine Top and over at the Sunrise Ski Resort is going to be fabulous for skiing. They're going to get dumped on. It is ski season. You want to be there. Why not head up to the Honda Resort and Casino this weekend? Get away from the hustle and bustle, wherever you are taking us in, and enjoy the entertainment. Eat some great food. Have some fun. Go over and do some snowboarding. Do some skiing at the Sunrise Ski Resort. You can get all your ski stuff there at the ski shop. And then at the Honda Resort and Casino at night, you can kick back, relax, have a couple drinks, pull down the slots, and have great fun. That's all at the Honda Resort and Casino. Honda Resort and Casino just outside of Pine Top in the beautiful White Mountains. I think that I want to start with, just briefly, the story of the day in sports. There's two stories. One's really good. One is not good at all. The story that's not good at all is Josh Hamilton, which was a feel-good story in sports, in baseball, who is a drug addict, and he has tried to deal with his problem, and it sounds as though he has relapsed, that a suspension is coming. I think America was in love with what Josh Hamilton did. The Angels have a lot of money due to him. That story is going to come down sometime later today. Tonight, there's not many nights when I would tell you there is an NBA game that you cannot miss, and it's not the Suns in Oklahoma City. You can miss that one. The Cavaliers play the Warriors tonight. This game is in Cleveland. I think it's a bigger game for Cleveland than it is for Golden State. But you have Steph Curry, you can make the argument, is the MVP candidate this year, although there's been a push lately for Westbrook against LeBron. When Steve Kerr was here and he wanted to trade Amari to get Steph Curry on draft night and it fell apart, Steve Kerr knew what he was doing. And then when he took the Golden State job, he said, you know, I think I'm going to get myself probably one of the best backcourts in Klay Thompson and Steph Curry. If you've not seen Steph Curry play, this is one of those games, and I believe it's the TNT game tonight, so it's one of those games you would want to make an effort to see tonight. It's not often that I get all wound up. I'm going to find my way to watch some of that game tonight. So that's on my mind. Locally, the angle that has come up here in the last day or so is Carson Palmer having to rework his contract, potentially. And what are the Cardinals going to do with Darnell Dockett? I'm of the opinion that this is a year that the Cardinals with their quarterback aging, I'm one of those that has said, I think they need to find the quarterback of the future this year. I don't know if it's Drew Stanton. I don't know if it's Logan Thomas. I don't get an indication that they've got it all figured out, or if you just go find another veteran a year from now. That said, if Palmer's reworking his contract to give them more money so when free agency starts next week, I'm fine with that. I'm down with that. And that's actually admirable if in fact, they're able to pull that off. You have to go for it this year with this roster. You just gave Fitzgerald an extension. He's not going to be here much longer. And Palmer is two injuries this last year. This is the year the Cardinals have to go for it. So go spend money. Go after it. Last night, I decided to go see some high school basketball because I'm a hoopaholic. I can tell you that I have a problem. My problem is I love seeing hoops. It doesn't matter if it's on the high school, college. I'll go see junior college. If I know that there's a player in Arizona that I have to go see, boy or girl, I will go see it. I am fine being that guy sitting by himself with the ball cap on backwards and sweats. That wasn't the case last night. I was dressed rather nicely. But I went over to Glendale, drove through the middle of Phoenix at 4:30 in the afternoon to go see a basketball game where I didn't know any of the kids in Glendale. That tells you I'm certifiable. That's just the way it is. And because there's three Division I kids in the court that I wanted to see for Gilbert Christian. And it was fine. I had planned it out that I get done at about 6:45, 7 o'clock over in Glendale, and I will go over to Tempe to go see Corona del Sol. Eric was there. I knew that it was a packed house. My hoopaholic buddies have been sending me texts, guys that are in their 30s, 40s, 50s. Are you going tonight? Are you going tonight? I don't get that about, are you going to the Suns game tonight? I don't get that about, are you going to the ASU game tonight? I definitely get that when it is, let's go see this kid play. So everything is fine over in Glendale. I drive in my normal way like I'm going to a Coyotes game. The very nice security guy points me into the parking garage to go park into in my usual space. The parking garage is rather empty. I don't think much about it. I get out of my car. I walk into the game. Game's fine. I walk out. I go to my car to and I pull up to pull out of the garage. There's nobody in there except myself. Nobody. So I pull up to the gate, and the gate won't lift. And it's 6:50. And the gate's the only way I'm going to get out is the gate lifts. So I'm like, oh, that's no big deal. I go over. I push the button. The gate should go up. Gate doesn't go up. That's at one entrance. Now I go to another entrance, exit. Same thing, won't go up. I'm stuck. So I'm not happy. I can't get out of a garage in Glendale that I've been going to forever, and there's nobody there to help me out. So I leave my car running. I walk into the front security desk over at the jobbing.com arena, and a very nice guy goes, oh, we don't handle that. Boy, you're stuck. Yeah, you think? I'm trying to get out of a garage. I'm not very happy about it. So he gets on the phone and he's like, well, there's a nice gentleman here and he can't seem to get out of the garage. I don't know what we should do. You know, are you at Mayberry RFD? You know, is that your deal, Opie? I want out. So I get it. He gives me the, well, it's really owned by the hotel. So I have to go over to the hotel, and the nice lady at the hotel prints me a room key and says, there's a big sign that says it's only for hotel guests. I said, yeah, but the security guard's the one that gave me the spot to park in. So I'm rather grumpy. I'm missing time. I get out of there. Now I'm not in a good mood. I get over to ASU, and Eric picks up the story from there because this was your first time ever seen this kid that everybody's raving about, who's 6'10", 6'11", and he's only a freshman, and there's guys on top. There was a big crowd there last night. It was like an ASU crowd last night.
The most important thing that you just said is this kid, because you're referencing Marvin Bagley III, the YouTube sensation.
Yeah.
The, what is he, 15-year-old?
First time you've ever seen him.
15-year-old freak.
What'd you think?
Okay, here's what I thought. I've seen the dunks on YouTube. I've seen the come across the lane and swat a shot out of bounds play.
Mm-hmm.
I have not seen the grab a rebound, start a fast break, finish a fast break. I have not seen a step outside the paint, behind the arc, shoot a three-pointer.
We have some video of him, too, that you shot last night. So let's roll this in as you talk about it.
He's everything that I had heard and about 100 times more. And I haven't, you know, I watch quite a bit of high school basketball, Brad. And I've heard the whispers of Marvin Bagley has a chance to be the best high school basketball player ever to come out of the state of Arizona.
Yeah.
After last night, I'm convinced.
So big men are very rare. Okay, so we don't see the guys that are 6'9", 6'10", that make plays like that, okay? As I've watched him play, I think that as any normal freshman kid, there's times where he gets pushed around. I thought Bibby was the best player that I've seen come out of Arizona, and Bayless was right there with him. In terms of big men, the big men that have rolled out of Arizona, though, there have not been very many. You know, Harper Camp was a nice player.
Sure.
Nice player.
Went to Cal.
Yeah, had a nice little run, nice little career. Those that have been here longer than nanosecond would go back to Mark Allery, who was over at Brophy, I believe, before I got here. I've heard his name brought up. Channing Frye was a different type of player and was just a...
Right.
Channing Frye was a kid that if you pour tomato juice in him, turn him sideways, he was a thermometer.
Richard Jefferson was a good player. He played down low a lot at
Moon Valley
and then
yeah.
became more of a wing at U of A. Has had a long NBA career. But, I mean, Bagley has the handles... And he has just, you hate to use the word because it's overused so much, upside.
Yeah.
But his upside, I mean, he's just scratching the surface. He has 3 years of high school basketball left, and he's already the state's most dominant player.
He has a point guard, in my opinion, that is, he's going to go wherever he wants to go to. So we have two very, very, very high ceiling guys here in the state. So the college side, it's fun to talk about U of A, and we'll get into that in a minute with Bill Frieder and ASU. It's fine that we have an NBA team that blows, but we have an NBA team that blows nonetheless. It's great that we have the Suns here. So I can move over to the Suns. They won last night in a who-cares game at Denver, and they won by 15. Bledsoe had 18, had 6. The most important part is hearing Jeff Hornacek after the game because he has not had much to be pleased about with the Suns here in recent weeks.
We played with a little more desperation than we've been playing with, and they really went after those balls. I didn't think we played great. We can do a lot better, which is encouraging. If we continue to just play that defense, our shooting, we only shot 33% again from the three-point line, which typically we're better than that. So, if we can get on the roll with making our three-pointers and then play that type of defense, we'll have a chance.
It's Jeff Hornacek last night. So the Suns win in a game that was pretty nondescript, in my opinion. Regular season, snowy night, not much of a crowd in Denver. And they have tonight, Oklahoma City, and Saturday night, San Antonio. And this whole thing about gelling and getting to know one another and all that nonsense, just put it off to the side. San Antonio is not going to want to care if you gel or not. And Westbrook is here tonight, and people are talking about Westbrook as a potential MVP candidate. So there's something there. Later on in the show, Charles Davis, in about 15 minutes, we'll talk about the NFL draft. He released his latest mock draft on NFL.com, also with Fox Sports. Peter King wrote about Brandon Bostic today, and I want to read some of that. Those of you that follow the NFL closely know Brandon Bostic was the guy with the Packers on the onside kick that didn't do his job. He's received death threats. He's been released by the Packers. And he wrote a first person for Peter that was just... really good. I'm going to bring you some of that. And much, much more on my mind. But on the other side, Bill Frieder, lead college basketball analyst, Westwood One, former Sun Devil coach, his view of Arizona State, his view of Arizona. Does Sean Miller's team have enough to win a national championship? Big weekend ahead starting tonight for both schools in Utah and Colorado. That's next. I'm Brad Sussmat. Sports 360, AZ.com. We partner with AZ Central Sports.
Like our Facebook fan page for unique Arizona sports content from the high schools to the pros. Facebook.com/sports360AZ.
Bill Frieder joins us now for a couple of minutes. Sports 360 AZ. AZ Central Sports, we partner with the Arizona Republic. Brad Sussmat, Westwood One, lead basketball analyst. Always good to catch up with a former Sun Devil coach, and he has turned his career in broadcasting to the top of the heap with Westwood One. How are you, Bill?
I'm doing great, Brad. How you doing, young man?
Pounding through it. You know, it's that time of year where Arizona State is just kind of sitting there, like, what direction are they going to go? U of A is on a huge run with a game at Colorado. Utah is kind of the surprise team, I think. And it's a big weekend for the Utah Utes tonight with the Sun Devils and then the Cats on Saturday. So let's start there with your view of the Pac-12 and those teams in particular.
I think the Pac-12 obviously has got Utah and Arizona for sure going to the tournament. And then they'll either end up with three or four. They'll get two of the next three, Oregon, Stanford, and UCLA. Utah, I think the jury's still out. In order for me to be sold on them completely, they need to win two at home this week, and I don't know if they'll do that. I think they got their hands full with both of the Arizona teams, because Arizona State, even though they didn't play well against Southern Cal, they're a much better team than they were in January.
Yeah, they were awful in January. I was down in Tucson.
And he's done a nice job bringing this team along. And with the losses in the league this year, Arizona State could be pretty good next year.
You know, it's one of those things where fans around Tempe are saying, you know, they've played better here in the second half. Could they make a run at the Pac-12 tournament in Las Vegas? Do you see that as a possibility out of this team?
Yeah, I do, because Arizona, even though U of A is better now also than they were earlier, they still have holes. They could have been beaten by UCLA had UCLA played better. They got some holes. They sometimes don't rebound like they should for a big team. They sometimes don't get frontline scoring. Even the freshman has been inconsistent at times. I think they got some holes, and you can't put them with Duke or Kentucky or some of those seemingly little better teams. So they're beatable. And Arizona State has already beaten them. I think Arizona State could make a run. But, you know, to be fair to them, there's other teams that could make a run, like mm-hmm. Oregon, you know. Mm-hmm. So you've got, you know, Arizona, Utah, and look at UCLA surprising a year ago. And then you got Oregon and Arizona State on the uptick. So I think any of those five could win it.
Bill Frieder, Westwood One lead analyst, for a couple of minutes on the show. I think in the case of U of A, Bill, Stanley Johnson has been a handful in some respects in watching Sean Miller try to work with him and to accept that you're not the guy anymore like you were on your club team or at Modern Day a year ago, and you've got to play within our system. What have you seen out of Stanley Johnson? Because there was so much hype about him. He's a one-and-done guy. There's no question about that. But what have you seen out of him?
He's a great player, and you said it, Brad. It's a matter of learning what you need to do and not do at the next level. And, you know, when I think back to my great teams at Michigan, for instance, mm-hmm. guys like Glenn Rice. If Glenn Rice was coming out today, do you think he'd be starting as a freshman and be in the NBA after 1 year? Absolutely. And yet back then I had the luxury of bringing Glenn Rice off the bench as a freshman and then bring him along as a most valuable player in the league. So, you know, they're jumping in the league fast, and some of them make their adjustments quicker than other, and Stanley Johnson's still going through this adjustment phase of how you have to play at this level to be successful. But he's a great talent, and I think he could be dangerous down the stretch.
The whole freshman eligibility debate has been brought up again here in the last week or so. Where do you come down on that?
I mean, I would love to see freshmen ineligible. I just don't see it happening, although some of these leagues say they're going to do it. So that would solve a lot of problems. That would make kids maybe go somewhere right out of high school. They certainly don't want to go to college and sit a year.
Right.
It'll be interesting. I don't think the presidents have the guts to pass it.
So they'd end up maybe going to overseas. They'd go that
route.
Sure,
you know, sure.
The overseas game, they'd pay big bucks in Russia or wherever to go play.
If there was an age limit in the NBA and they'd have to sit a year in college, they'd go play somewhere else for $1 million or more.
Would there be a group that would say, you know what, we'll make a league here in the United States? I can't see that happening, but I've heard that as well.
I don't see that happening.
Yeah, yeah. The court storming debate, where do you come down on that one?
I think they got a problem. I think they need to beef up security, the places that are having problems, and I think the league has to penalize teams if they can't control their crowd.
Sean Miller said earlier this week, $100,000 on the school if they storm the
Absolutely.
court.
I mean, you know, it's just a matter of putting gates up, you know, like some schools do, so they can't get down, and having more people in their blazers controlling them, and it can be done.
Bill Frieder with us. Before I let you go, so you're doing the Mountain, Missouri?
I'm doing the Missouri Valley. I'm doing four conference tournaments, they're telling me. The first one will be the Missouri Valley Conference, which is a week from Saturday.
Okay.
That's September. It's March 7th and 8th I go in St. Louis. I go right from there to Vegas to do the WCC, I think Monday night, and then I'm not doing the Pac-12. I think I got something else in the middle, and then the Big Sky.
So I got
three or four tournaments starting Monday.
Well, have fun with it, and I appreciate the time and the visit as always. Stay in touch, Bill.
Appreciate it, Brad. Thanks for calling.
Bill Frieder with us for a couple of minutes. Always good to catch up with Freeds. Things around the college basketball front for a couple of minutes. There's been some news that I've just looked down at while I was talking to Bill, and that is that Adrian Peterson has been, Adam Schefter tweeted out a minute ago, Judge Doty has overturned Adrian Peterson's decision, and Peterson now will be reinstated per source.
Ah, the wheels are now spinning.
Well, and here's the thing on this. It seems to me, and I'm only going off what I have read, and I did talk to one agent about this, as nasty as it was with the agent and Peterson and all that stuff last week, or the agent and the Vikings, I should say, this agent said there's entirely too much money on the table for him to leave Minnesota. You know, and you have to also look at what happened in terms of what are his obligations, meaning how many people is he paying money to for kids? You know, you have to factor that stuff in. None of us know that. Those are the details none of us know. So does he need a check? Is he going to need checks down the road? And it's all well and good and fun here to say, oh, he's going to go to the Cowboys. You know, what a great move it would be for the Cowboys when, does that make sense to him to leave so much money on the table? Will the Vikings release him? Will the Vikings demand a king's ransom from him? You know, I brought up earlier how the Cardinals have to go for it this year. They have to go for a Super Bowl this year. And you'll say, well, they have to do that every year. No, with the roster aging at quarterback and at wide receiver with two of your key guys you're tying up money in, and if Carson Palmer does rework his contract, good for him. But look, a guy like Adrian Peterson, if you determine a year off has not hurt him at his position, are you mortgaging in your future? Let's not forget who's very, very close in Minnesota to Adrian Peterson. That's Larry Fitzgerald. Let's not forget that. Okay, Larry Fitzgerald worked this organization over hard to draft Michael Floyd, if we remember correctly. Let's not just sit here and say Michael Floyd fell in their laps. That's the guy that Fitz was lobbying for behind the scenes. And what do you know? They drafted him. And has he been all that? I would say no, he hasn't. So this is a big deal with the Adrian Peterson decision being overturned, and Peterson will now be reinstated. A couple of minutes ago, that came down from Adam Schefter. So you keep an eye on that. On the other side, we'll have Charles Davis with us. First, let me tell you about Santan Ford. Santan Ford, where it is all about you. So I don't have anything in front of me, guys. This is not a sleight of trick. There's nothing on my sleeves. I don't have some script here like guys usually do, where they sit there and they're told to read this and read that and make it sound all nice and all that. I'm just telling you from person to person, guy to guy, okay? If you consume this show or consume our content, we don't just go partner with anybody. I've walked away from people and said no to people because they wouldn't be a good fit when it comes to doing business in the way of a partnership. And Santan Ford has been that way with us from day number one. General Manager Tim Hovick said, whatever you do, whatever you need, we are with you. We see what you're doing in this digital age. You're so far ahead of the game. Yeah, but it takes partners to get this thing off and running, and he's been with me since day number one. Now, I could sit here and say, yeah, I drive this vehicle, that vehicle. Lots of guys do that. Yeah, I use this product, that product, and you find out they never do it. I drive a Ford Fusion. I bought Explorer for my wife. We traded in our Expedition. Okay, so Ford is in our family. Ford is in our blood. And for you, if you're looking for that new vehicle or that certified pre-owned vehicle, I talk about this often. If you get up in the morning and you get in your vehicle and go to work and you're like, why am I driving this? I don't like this anymore. I need a new vehicle. I need to lower my payment. Maybe I need to get into a certified pre-owned instead of just driving recklessly. Or maybe your life has changed where you need something to haul the kids and the equipment around. You're no longer the 29-year-old single guy. You're the 37-year-old guy that's got the wife, kids, and your weekends are full of sin at soccer fields, football fields, basketball gyms. It's like me. This weekend, I'm going to be at a basketball tournament at noon, and I'm going to be at a swimming pool at 1:45. I don't know how we're going to make it, but I know we're going to drive in our Explorer to go from place to place. We're going to be in Avondale for one event, at McClintock High for another event, and back at Avondale at 5. And then I'm probably going to go try to see some high school games. I'm going to do it in a vehicle that makes sense for me, and that's the Explorer, certified pre-owned. Stop in yourself at Santan Ford, just off the Santan 202 in Val Vista. Santan Ford, where it is all about you. Charles Davis on the other side, NFL Network, Fox Sports analyst on the NFL draft. He released his latest mock draft on NFL.com. That's on the other side. I'm Brad Sussmat. Sports 360 AZ, we partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports, told Eric, I think the last time or time before we had Charles Davis on, I said, there's certain guys that I would love to do a weekly with. We do weeklies with Pedro Gomez. We do weeklies with Peter King. And at some point, I hope we can work something out with Charles Davis because the NFL Network and Fox analyst is terrific on a lot of fronts. And he's a busy guy. He comes on quite often. Last time we had him on, he had no voice at all, which was fine on my part. He was embarrassed, but it's fine. How are you, Charles?
I hope that my voice is better, and I can help erase some of the embarrassment and the consternation I caused with that. And I appreciate everyone out there hanging with us on that one because you know they deserve better if they tune in. But I hope this is a little bit better.
You bring your A game. I know that. when I was watching the combine, and you had this moment where you're sitting on the set with Mariota and Winston.
Yeah.
It was a terrific moment that the NFL Network put together last week, and you're part of that interview. What'd you come away with? I was just curious. Like, what's Charles thinking of sitting with both these guys, and what did he come away with?
Oh, good question. Well, let me try and quantify that and be somewhat succinct for it.
Sure.
What I came away with, let's start with Jameis Winston. Everything you heard about with him and thought about him in terms of confidence level, right? In terms of belief in self, in terms of being an alpha, is all true. He's very much that. I did not feel that he came off as an obnoxious alpha. You know, that guy that no matter what has to have everyone in the room, all eyes on me, no matter what. He's much more of a, if he enters the room, eyes turn toward him. Does that make sense?
Sure.
The room tilt. There's certain people in this world that the room tilts towards them. Now, some people will not keep their attention there. They will think that this is not my cup of tea. But as far as a football player, a quarterback, those are some of the qualities you're looking for. That guys will gravitate towards him. That people will want to be around him. I flip it over to Marcus Mariota. He's a guy that you notice because of his height coming into a room. But after that, he is easily the type of person who will melt into the room.
Right.
And that's something that, of course, concerns NFL people because they'd much rather their quarterbacks not melt into the room. It's not always the quarterback that is jumping on his teammates on the sidelines and, you know, ranting and raving and all that. That's not what they're looking for. But what they want to know is that if it's necessary, if it's needed, that quarterback has that fire to get after someone, right, to motivate, to do things. And for Marcus Mariota, it's a tougher projection because a good portion of that, as you know, comes from guys who are in the huddle. And in Oregon, they don't huddle.
Yeah.
So you don't build those skills, and it's as basic as calling a play in the huddle. And in the NFL, that's a big deal. You've got to be able to spit out that verbiage and have everyone believe each play that this is a successful play about to happen. He just has not been asked to do that. Does that make sense?
Sure, but what was interesting, I thought, was it makes sense. you talk about the tilting of the room. It felt like Winston needed the room to tilt, or in this case, the cameras and the set and the people doing the interviews to tilt towards him, where Mariota was just kind of like, yeah, it's another interview and it's fine. I'm sitting here with this guy. You know what I mean? It wasn't that big of a deal to him.
I do, and I think that you hit on something, and let me see if I can hit from the other direction on it. I think your point's well taken. In this case, James Winston absolutely had to have this happen because there were so many question marks coming in, right? All the issues he had had, how will he project? What did we all say going into the combine? It wasn't going to be his on-field stuff that people were focused on, right? It was going to be, hey, how's he going to do in the interviews? How's he going to do winning the room? How's he going to do at his press conference? That was very, very important for him. For Marcus Mariota, none of those questions existed. So in a sense, he could be the guy to just sit back and say, look, you need to do all this? Go ahead. They're good with me on this. That part's fine. But one thing I will tell you, and I am a monster Marcus Mariota fan. I mean, I will make no bones about it. I won't try and hide it. The thing that would be of concern for me is that he really doesn't like doing this stuff. He is really ill at ease. And it's okay to not like it, but guess what? A starting quarterback in the NFL,
right. There's
no getting around it. Okay, I'm talking about the interviews. I'm talking about meeting with the media. People may or may not know this. When a football team, an NFL team, travels to go do a game, doesn't matter what network they're meeting with, okay, let's say you're on the road, your first obligation when you get to the hotel before you do anything else is typically to go meet with the TV people. Mm-hmm. Okay, so most of these guys will come in, put their bag down in the corner of the room. Okay, here he is, Marcus Mariota, starting quarterback. And he hadn't even checked into the hotel yet. He's not even gotten to his room. And that's what it's like. That's every week. There's no week off for a quarterback meeting with the TV people. It's not like they go, well, this week, no quarterback. The quarterback is every week. And if you're a home game, you're going to meet with them as well. So those are the things that he's going to have to really understand that there's no way out on it. You know, there's no way to do it. You might as well get comfortable with it. And some quarterbacks do it better than others. And it doesn't always, you can't always extrapolate, well, he's great with the TV people. That means he's great everywhere else. It doesn't always go into play, but it is part of the job. It is part of the obligation. And he'd rather not do it. Jameis Winston, I think, will eat it up. But Marcus is going to have to get used to it. If he's going to be a starter, he's going to deal with us all the time.
Charles Davis, NFL Network Fox analyst. His latest mock draft is on NFL.com. And to follow your point, Mariota to the Jets and trying to deal with New York media day in and day out.
Yeah.
You know, that would be a real adventure. Let's follow up on some Arizona-based players. And let's start with Brett Hundley. And how do you think he did at the combine? And what does he need to show here leading up to the draft in May?
Real quick on Mariota before we go on. When I put him sixth with the Jets, I did it with trepidation. Because of your point about New York. New York and Marcus Mariota scare me. That scares the heck out of me. To me, he's better off if he slides to 10 to St. Louis. Because I think that's a perfect spot for him with that organization. But we'll move on from there. Let's go to Brett Hundley. One of my favorite kids that I've met along the way. Love him. Absolutely love him. Looks like a quarterback. Carries himself like a quarterback. Does all those things. I did not think he threw the ball well at the combine. And I say that with a lot of reservation. You know why? Because what do we do every year? We beg these guys to throw, don't we?
Yep.
And we also say we understand it's difficult to throw in this situation because you're throwing to guys that you've never thrown to. You know, they may run routes differently. You may look bad in terms of completion percentage, but we still want you to throw because we say that we're not concerned with that, right? Then a guy throws, and what do? We kill him, right? Oh, my God, that didn't look good. That was terrible. And so it's just really, really unfair. But I did not think he had his best day throwing the football. I didn't see the zip that I normally see on it. I thought his deep ball hung a little bit, so I cannot wait for his pro day when he gets a chance to rip it again because I think he'll have a much better day. I think he'll look like the quarterback that I believe he is, which is the guy competing to be the third quarterback in this draft, and I haven't come close to giving up on that with him yet. Other people have. I will tell you that. Other people I talk to have given up on that with him. I'm nowhere near that. I think, Brett Hundley's potential. I said it before the combine. I'm going to stick with it. Wherever he is ranked right now and wherever he is drafted, I believe Brett Hundley has potential to play above those rankings and draft number. I really do.
Terrific kid. I've seen him since seventh grade out here, and his pro day will be on March 10th over at UCLA. We'll see how that works out. Jalen Strong. How did Jalen Strong? We saw the numbers. We heard all the raving about him at the combine. Jalen Strong's combine.
Fantastic. I don't think it could have gone any better for Jalen Strong. Knew about the talent, knew about the potential. I think most people had a second-round grade on him going into the combine, just called a hunch and called, you know, a little bit of research. After he ran, what did he run, 4.44?
Yep.
That changed things for him because now that straight-line speed, he's not just a big target who bodies people away from the football. He's a guy now that you believe with 4.4 speed can find his way to uncover before the ball gets to him. Because, you know, we use that term all the time. When does a guy uncover himself? Some guys do it by creating separation, right? They run their routes, they create separation, you stick the ball in on it. Some guys don't create that same separation because they're not as fast or as wiggly. And people had a concern about that with Jalen Strong. Would he be the guy that's going to have to make every catch a contested catch, a tough catch, and use his body to do so? I think that after him running the 4.44, don't be surprised if you see a lot more first-round mention for him, because now he's not just a basketball player taking the football out of the air. He becomes much more of a receiver you can do things with.
Those are the guys in state that there's a lot of buzz about. I could go through each player individually. I don't want to do that. But did anybody else, there was Pete, there was the ASU kids, anybody else jump out at you in state from the combine or even the Senior Bowl?
Demarius Randall, one of my favorites. Love him, absolutely love him. People have to decide what position they want to play him because he's played both at Arizona State, but he ran well enough to think of him as a corner, and he has a corner's build. Mm. But I'm not sure if he's a corner or if he has that safety mentality and instinct. Similar to Tyrann Mathieu when he came out of LSU, a corner body, a safety instinct and playmaking ability. And nowadays, guess what? Your safety doesn't have to be 200-something pounds and absorb all the same contact in the run game, does he? The way they're throwing it around now, you can get away with smaller safeties. I think Demarius Randall projects very well as a very speedy safety. And who do we have to cover nowadays that are shredding defenses? Those big fleet-footed tight ends who are really just rocked-up wide receivers, right?
Yep, that's a good way to put it. Before I let you go, so on your mock draft, we look here at the Cardinals. I would like to see them go after a running back. I don't believe Melvin Gordon will be there at all when they pick. They need help on the defensive front. They need help at linebacker. What do you see in terms of players in the Cardinals' vicinity when they draft through your mock?
Boy, I'm trying to remember. Who did I give them in my mock? That's the scary part.
On the
let's
defense.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, I think I went defense with them, didn't I?
I think you did, yeah.
I think I might have gone Eric Armstead from Oregon.
Did. Eric said
as a bookend to Calais Campbell. But let's talk these running backs, because I think you're right. Let's say the young man from Wisconsin, Gordon, isn't there. Gurley possibly could still be around. And with guys like Ellington around, Fontana, things, you might want to take that little bit of a chance because he's coming off the ACL, because what you get in return is an absolute beast phenomenon. I think Todd Gurley, you know, if he's not hurt, we're talking about someone in the top 10 probably taking him. That's how good I feel about him as a running back. If you want runners later on, there are going to be guys there. Tevin Coleman, a Duke Johnson.
Yep.
You know, guys of that nature will be, you know, possibly around. But it wouldn't surprise me to see a pretty good run on running backs starting with the second round. I think second, third round is when you start to get the better guys. And my sleeper guy there is a guy by the name of David Johnson from the University of Northern Iowa. I think he can do it all. He's a former receiver turned into a running back. And in today's NFL, guys who can catch the football out of the backfield, they will find work.
I'll let you go off that. Appreciate your time and your insight as always on the show and around the state. Thanks. Appreciate it, Charles.
Thanks for having me, and I certainly hope that things came off a little bit better for everyone having to listen to me this time. Take care now.
As always, Charles Davis, NFL Network Fox analyst, for a couple of minutes. His latest mock draft is on NFL.com. And you can check out all that content right there. There's a lot there to digest. Wow. Demaryius Randle, huh? You know, we'd heard Demaryius Randle. Eric, when you were at the Combine, he didn't run when you were there. So
he ran after I left.
Yeah, after you left.
But he ran fast.
Yeah.
And he's an intriguing prospect. He could be one of those later round guys that has a nice little career, especially if he can play special teams and contribute in other ways.
Sure, so. Sure.
He's a tweener, just like Charles Davis said.
On the other side, we're going to go back on the Adrian Peterson being reinstated. Also, a little bit more on the night. It wasn't just Marvin Bagley here in Arizona. There was a kid last night that did something truly amazing in my book in a span of 4 minutes on the college basketball front. And Brandon Bostic opens up about what happened with him in Green Bay. There's a lot of Packer fans, NFL fans here in the state. I think you're going to want to hear his first-person account on why the Packers blew him out. That's straight ahead. I'm Brad Sussmat.
For in-depth, unique coverage from the high schools to the pros, follow us on Twitter at Sports360AZ.
So Peter King's site did something really cool that I wanted to bring up to you. The MMQB, we have Peter on the show during the regular season quite a bit, on a weekly basis, actually, and in the offseason as well. And, yeah, I'll get over the Adrian Peterson stuff. Again, the suspension has been lifted, so Adrian Peterson's going to be reinstated. That is one big story going on in the world of sports today. I'll get back to that in a couple minutes. Brandon Bostic was the guy that when we were watching the end of the Packers-Seahawks game, all he was supposed to do on an onside kick was do his job, and he didn't do it. And the Packers ended up releasing him this last week, and he became the guy that everybody wanted to hear from. He wrote a first-person account that Peter put up on his site this morning. I'm going to just read you a little bit of this because I think for anybody who's in the sports world, anybody who loves the sports world, if you're a Packer fan, he's ended up signing with the Vikings now. So he goes from Green Bay to Minnesota. This is Brandon Bostic. Sometimes I wake up in the morning and it's the first thing on my mind. There are nights when I dwell on it before falling asleep. Sometimes the thought creeps up on me when I'm lifting weights or eating dinner or sitting on my couch at home. I flash back to that moment. I can see the ball floating right in front of me and I wonder, what if? I messed up in the NFC Championship game and it, trust me, it hurts. I'll probably think about my role in the botched onside kick every day for the rest of my life. It haunts me like a reoccurring nightmare. Most of America didn't know my name before January 18, 2015. I grew up in Florence, South Carolina, played Division II football at Newberry College. I signed with the Packers in 2012 as an undrafted free agent, spent the entire year on the practice squad. The transition to the NFL is difficult, especially for a small college guy. My first year in the league was humbling. I busted my ass every week to get better and to help the team, only to watch them play on Sundays knowing I couldn't contribute. But by 2013, I'd cracked the lineup, and last season I began playing pretty regularly. Still, most people, perhaps even some Packer fans, didn't know who I was until there were 2 minutes and 7 seconds left to play in the NFC title game. We led the Seahawks 19-14 when they attempted the onside kick. Andrew Corliss lined up next to me. Quote, "I got this guy, you got this guy," he said. "You know your assignment." "Yeah," I said, "I got this." I was supposed to block for Jordy Nelson, who was right behind me. We had practiced this dozens, if not hundreds of times before. But when the ball appeared in front of me, just floating in the air, my mind went blank. I forgot everything I was supposed to do. It's not that CenturyLink Field was too loud or that I crumbled under the pressure of the situation. Instinct just kicked in. The ball was in front of me. I wanted to grab it. I jumped up. I reached for it, and my life changed forever. And they have a bunch of pictures of him on this, and it's truly, truly hard to hear what this young man's going through. What transpired next was a blur, an out-of-body experience, like watching a train wreck from afar. I remember Jordy coming to talk to me after Seattle recovered the ball, but I don't remember exactly what he said. I remember retreating to the sideline and just sitting on the bench. I was numb. A few teammates came by to pump me up. They said to keep my head up, that we would still pull this off. The Seahawks won 28-22 in overtime. The visiting locker room was dark and cramped. I sat in front of my stall for nearly 40 minutes. The media poured in. They asked question after question, wanting me to walk them through the play. To be honest, I was so numb, I began talking and didn't know what I was saying. I apologized. I knew I had messed up. I got on the plane in a daze. There have been a few deaths in my family, and when I was in high school, a favorite uncle passed away. When he died, I didn't cry because it didn't feel real. The night of the NFC Championship game kind of felt like that. I knew it was a big deal. I knew it was a key mistake that cost us a trip to the Super Bowl, but with all due respect, I think the media kind of took it and ran with it. I became the singular scapegoat. Social media didn't help either. I don't know how many death threats I received, but there have been a lot. I still haven't read most of the messages that people sent me, but I want to so I can deal with the consequences and use it as motivation. It is physically impossible for me to read every troll's comments. The volume is simply too much. So their comments sit there untouched maybe forever. One last part on this. It's weird how people know me for a play but don't know me as a person. I am human. I made a mistake. I'm working my hardest to live with it and learn from it. In times of adversity, you find out who really has your back. One guy in particular has been a big help. His name is Ernest Biner. You may know him as the running back responsible for the fumble, which cost the Browns the 1987 AFC title game. Biner called me out of the blue, and now we talk once or twice a week. His biggest advice, face your mistake, don't run from it. So he's now been signed by the Minnesota Vikings. And look, everybody's got a story in the world of sports, and most of you Packer fans could care less about Brandon Bostic, and you're not going to like him probably for the rest of your lives. Although I think Packer fans, they're not like Cowboy fans. They're just completely out of their minds, or Raider fans, which are just a bunch of sick individuals. No, in this case, reading Brandon Bostic's first account, that will tell you what it's like for some of these guys. And I can't imagine him going through something like that.
Really transparent, really transparent. No, it reminds me, Brad, on a much bigger scale, of Bill Buckner. Because Bill Buckner was a guy who ran from those demons.
Didn't want to talk about it.
It's
a good call.
And then finally, the Red Sox reached out to him and said, you know what, we want to honor you. We want to kind of open up. We want you to reconnect. And the Boston fans were very forgiving. And then as soon
Not all of them.
No, but as soon as they won a World Series, that huge boulder in many ways was lifted off his back because the curse was essentially over.
Right. No, you're right on that. You're right on that. And it's... I can't imagine being in that space, and I also would think that if you were in his spot, you'd say, well, I'm getting paid money here to do this. Yeah, I understand that. But if you're playing the game of football and a ball comes towards you, you're supposed to follow your assignment. He didn't do it, and now it's going to haunt him for the rest of his life, and he gets death threats over this? What type of people would threaten somebody's life over a football game? I mean, just that on its own merit, that's just sick. Sports360AZ.com. We are very Arizona-centric, except when I see a story like this. On a national stage, we like to jump around, too. We have plenty of content that is up on Sports360AZ.com right now. If you have not seen video yet of Marvin Bagley Jr., it's not often I sit here and tell you to go check out a high school story that we have with so much fervor, but Eric put up a story around his teammate who gets a little bit of attention. We've got the video of Bagley from last night, who was amazing. And he's just a freshman. He's worth watching. He is. In a day and age where a lot of sports is just noise at the high school level, we've got that up for you. Also, quite a bit of college content around recruiting year-round. We have a recruiting roundup. And on the pro level, too, my three-dot thoughts. I'm Brad Sussmat on a Thursday.